Welcome to Behind the Bite, where we delve deep into the real-life struggles and triumphs surrounding food, body, and weight. I'm Dr. Christina Castagnini, a psychologist and certified eating disorder specialist, bringing you a unique blend of personal experience as a recovered individual with over 25 years of professional expertise. In each episode, we'll share the courageous journeys of individuals who have faced these challenges firsthand, alongside insights from dedicated professionals in the field. Whether you're seeking healing, inspiration, or simply a deeper understanding, this podcast is here to empower you on your own path to a better life. Join us as we explore stories of resilience, discuss the latest insights, and strive to foster a community of support and growth. Together, we can break down barriers, challenge stigma, and pave the way towards healing and living authentically. Hello, everybody. Welcome to today's show. We've all seen those magazine covers, the flawless skin, the perfect body, the effortless smile. And probably thought, hey, if I could look just like that, I'd finally feel happy. And I hear that from patients all the time. But I want to ask you something. What if the woman in that picture, the one everyone envies, isn't happy? What if she's quietly falling apart inside? My guest today, Nikki DuBose, she knows that truth all too well. She was that model. She's the one that you've looked at in the magazines. She was living what looked like the dream, a thriving modeling career. She was in the spotlight, getting all the applause. But guess what? Behind the lens was a very different story. One marked by childhood trauma, self-doubt, and an eating disorder that began when she was a really young child. In our conversation today, Nikki is going to be really vulnerable, and she opens up about how the modeling world magnified her pain, how external praise replaced self-worth, and how hitting rock bottom became the turning point that turned her toward real recovery. She also shares what it took to tell her story publicly in her memoir, Washed Away, From Darkness to Light, and what it truly means to find beauty and peace from the inside out. So, look, if you've ever looked at someone else's quote-unquote perfect life and wondered why you still don't feel enough, this episode really is for you. Look, the truth is, the most beautiful transformation doesn't happen on the outside. It happens when you finally come home to yourself. I feel really honored that Nikki's here to share her story, and I want you to sit back, relax, and take in everything she has to share. All right, Greta, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here.
I'm excited as well. And as with most guests, I ask, like, if there's a starting point for you in terms of how you got into this field, whether it was something personally or like, how did you land here? Just very curious.
Yes, this could be a long story, but I'll try to keep it brief. I grew up playing lacrosse. I was always very athletic. And in middle school, started focusing in on lacrosse and ended up playing through college. And about sophomore year of high school was when I began playing year round. And at that point, I stopped getting a period. And my mom was on it. She took me to the OBGYN every year. We went to dietitians. And throughout high school and college, the message I heard was, this is normal. This is just what it means to be a competitive athlete. So I always to say, this is not an individual provider's fault. This is an issue of education. We have a lot of work to do in this area. But that's the message I heard of playing in college. You need to see their sports physician on campus. Didn't hear anything there. My college coach, my high school coach, the club coaches. It's just very normalized. And so I just believed that and didn't talk about it really with teammates. It just felt, okay, this is something invisible, but my doctor says it's fine, so I'm not going to worry about it. And then after college, this was the first time I had it enter my mind of, I don't know if I can believe this is normal anymore. And I wanted to run the Portland Marathon. So I went back to my doctor and said, I really want to do this, but I'm concerned. I want to make sure I'm taking care of my health. And I just want to double check about the period conversation. And again, she said, don't worry about it. I had that when I was younger. My daughter did run the marathon. And I started looking into it for myself. And that's when I found Nico's book, Nicola Skikes, No Period, Now What? And that just opened up this whole new world of intuitive eating, weight inclusivity, non-diet approach. And I learned, oh, wow, no period is really not something to ignore. This is your body sending a very strong signal that you're not meeting her needs. And that eventually led me to my Master of Science in Nutrition, Master of Public Health certifications as an intuitive eating counselor. I now coach lacrosse. So I wear many hats, but that personal start of believing for almost a decade that my missing period was just part of being an athlete is probably the strongest thread that pulled me to where I am today.
And I was an athlete as well, younger. And I remember hearing that as well. It was like, oh, you're exercising so much. That's normal. And so there is something to that. And I wonder, where did that come from? Do you have any idea?
Gosh, there's a lot of directions we could go with this. I would say to take my doctor's comment, this is just anecdotal, but this is something she experienced as an athlete. So because it's so common, there is this narrative that it's normal. And we do at this point, we need more research, but we do have the research illustrating why it's not normal. But we're talking about culture, we're talking about norms. So if a coach had that experience as a young athlete and didn't have anyone say, this is something to worry about, then they're gonna carry that belief forward to their athletes, to their daughters potentially. So I would say it's a cultural conversation. We do need more research always, especially for female athletes, but just this idea that this has been normalized in sport for a very long time. And because it's so common, most people have either experienced it themselves or know a teammate who did. And so this is where the knowledge, the conversation needs to be louder, because it's just this assumption that's been carried on for decades at this point.
So curious now, looking back in hindsight, right? So sophomore year, high school, your period stops. And what did they miss? Like, now that you know, like more, what do you think was going on at that point in time?
Gosh, when I think now back to being a high school athlete, you're in class for 7 hours a day. You have 2 hours of practice. You're growing. That takes a lot of food. And now I can see, looking back, I was absolutely not eating enough to fuel my body's needs. I was just following along what my teammates were doing, counting calories, having this mentality around food that we needed to be careful, we needed to watch what we eat. And in the moment, it just seemed normal. It seemed part of being a disciplined athlete. But in hindsight, I look back and I realize, again, we were growing. We were working really hard on the lacrosse field. We were studying hard. All of those things require quite a few calories. And I just didn't understand how much my body needed. And then those cultural messages around me were reinforcing this idea that less food is better, we need to be careful. And looking back, my poor body, she just wasn't getting enough nourishment, and shutting down the reproductive system is better than, say, shutting down the heart or the lungs. But we do know that there's a much broader impact than just fertility when those hormones are offline. And looking back, I can absolutely say I didn't understand how to fuel my body, and no one asked about that component whenever I was at a doctor's appointment or in a meeting with a coach.
Curious too. So what do you remember back then, if you can, about like where that number, and I don't like to talk about specific numbers, but where that number of calories per day that you needed came from? Was that something like, oh, all your friends or teammates are doing this specific number, so that's what you followed? Or like, where did that come from?
Everywhere it felt. I remember we all downloaded the same calorie counting app that gave us the number. And then the teen magazines we used to always read, I remember that number popping up there. So we didn't have social media at that point, but now as a coach, I see my girls getting nutritional information there, and that same number still pops up. So teammates, magazines, these calorie counting apps all were reinforcing that this was an admirable number to chase. But now I know it was nowhere near enough for anyone on my team.
So I'm curious, like, you work with people now that are athletes and this number pops up still. Do you find that if you try to educate people on that's not enough, that there's like some pushback, there's like fear that, oh no, if I go over and beyond this, that's too much, or like they don't want to do it, or they don't believe you?
One example I often use is that specific number is how much the National Institute of Health recommends for inactive toddlers. So I usually use that as a comparison and say, I don't see any toddlers in the room. So I feel that comparison tends to get buy-in. But then the immediate next question is, then how many calories should I be eating? It's so individualized. We're all different people. We all have different bodies. And so there's not going to be this one size fits all. So I would say potentially the biggest pushback is not so much questioning that's not enough, but then jumping to, okay, then what is the number I should be chasing? And being able to open that conversation of not only is calorie counting quite inaccurate, but it takes up so much headspace and energy. It's stressful. And so how can we reframe how we think about food so it's not so much a math equation? And it is, how do you feel in your body? What are the signs your body sends that you can tell you're hungry or you need some more food? And reframing it from that angle of, can we say, I want to prioritize eating enough rather than I'm fearing eating, quote, too much? Because typically, especially with athletes, we see under eating as a much bigger issue, but it's almost never addressed.
So I'm curious too, for you, like you were counting the calories, you were following along, thinking this was all normal. Did you ever feel like your body was screaming at you, like, I want to eat more, and you just were like, no, hellbent on sticking to this number? Or did you think, no, I'm just sticking to this number and I'm being quote unquote healthy and doing the right things?
I think mostly I thought I was doing the right thing. And it is interesting because looking back, the missing period was the biggest sign. And now I know that's a huge blaring alarm from my body. But again, back then I just thought this is part of being an athlete. There were little things I can look back on of, okay, maybe I was colder more often, or going to a team dinner, there would be some anxiety of, will there be, quote, healthy food there? But this is why I think personal stories are so important, because anyone who looked at me, I was team captain. I was recruited to play college lacrosse. I had a very large social life. So from the outside looking in, it didn't look like there was anything wrong. And other than my subtle anxiety around food, I also didn't feel like it was this huge issue. Because again, I wasn't the only one. This is how all of my friends and teammates were approaching food. It just felt like, not only is this part of being a woman, but this is part of being a dedicated athlete. We have discipline in our training, so we need that discipline in food as well. And you're continually reinforced by, wow, you have such great willpower. You're performing well on the field. So I would say there wasn't really internal or external warning signs that I perceived in the moment.
Yeah, I can totally see that. Like, you must have been thinking like, I'm doing great on the field. I'm doing my job on the team. I'm getting external validation. I've got like into college, all these things. Nobody would say, oh yeah, something's quote unquote wrong here. We need to look into this. Of course, she's doing something that's unhealthy for her body or hurting her body. And that, I think that's the thing, is like, it's so hidden and so under the radar. Like, who would have thought like to just check things out and be like, hey, it seems like, you know, your body's not functioning well, or you're not feeding yourself enough. Like, you're not performing as well on the field. Nobody would have even picked up on that.
And we were speaking a little before the call is now a big piece of my work is educating coaches. And if I ever talk about under eating or relative energy deficiency in sport is the fancy word for that. But sometimes coaches say, oh, wow, yes, this is a problem. I don't know how to approach it. But other times the response is, oh, that's not a problem on my team. Look at, they all look so healthy. And so really being able to shift the narrative of when we look at under eating or disordered eating or body image challenges or missing periods, any of these issues, it's not something you can assess by looking at a person's body. And that, my story is a prime example of that. I remember senior year of college, I was so stressed about my senior thesis and ended up losing a little weight and went to the doctor and she said, "Oh, you lost X pounds. You didn't need to, but you look great." So just in every corner of our culture, if there is any weight loss or if you are aligning with how we're conditioned to believe health looks, you get nothing but positive reinforcement. And so I wish She and I remember in the moment thinking, gosh, if she would have asked me about that weight loss, I would have said, this has been the most stressful academic term of my life. And that isn't a positive thing. And so even before I had that bigger picture awareness, I remember feeling odd in that moment because I knew this was a result of stress. This was not a health promoting thing that happened.
But even just think about that, right? Like the message of, oh, you look great. I'm wondering for you, did you have any thoughts? Did it feel good to hear that? Was it reinforcing?
I think that example in particular, I did feel uncomfortable because I was in the midst of this really stressful semester and I never skipped any meals, but running was how I managed my stress. So I was logging longer distances and didn't increase my food to support that because, again, I didn't understand how much food it really took to fuel my body. So even though I was still in this mindset that I need to be careful around how I eat. It still felt like an uncomfortable comment to hear, invalidating because I was in this very stressful situation and was being praised for it.
So I'm just thinking, like most people, if they were in had an eating disorder, hearing that comment, it'd be like reinforcing of the eating disorder behaviors and being like, oh, it's quote unquote working, or the Ed voice going, yay, and getting this happy moment. And then having the fear of, oh, if I stop doing, maybe you were running more. If I stop running more, what's going to happen? I'm not going to look as great anymore. Just all these messages people sometimes don't realize when they're making comments they think are positive, what it actually does to somebody who's really in the throes of an eating disorder. It can really reinforce some very harmful behaviors that you don't know by looking at somebody what they're actually going through.
Yes. And I think before and after photos on social media are the perfect example of that. If you see anyone who posts a before and after photo, almost invariably, you're going to see so many likes, so many comments, so many celebrations. And I don't think I've ever seen any comment of, gosh, are you okay? I don't think a public platform would be the place to have that conversation necessarily. But to your point, you're only going to get positive feedback. And this is something culturally we really need to think about because you don't know what's going on behind closed doors. And we all want to be complimented. And if you work hard towards something, it feels good to get that positive reinforcement. But it's so entrenched in our minds that weight loss equals always a positive thing. And so it can be very confusing whether you're really stressed or have an illness, whatever it might be, if you're in a smaller body and start getting all those compliments, how confusing and potentially uncomfortable and reinforcing if it is a disordered behavior. So, how can we shift the conversation and say, okay, let's stop commenting on people's bodies. And we cannot tell by looking at someone what's going on in their life with their mental health, et cetera.
And I'm even just thinking about you, right? Like in high school. Like, why would you even think to eat more or fuel your body with more nutrition when it seemed like you were so successful in your sport and you were getting so much positive reinforcement, right? Everything was quote unquote working so well for you. Why would you think, oh, I need to shift it up and eat more? Like, was that even anywhere on your radar?
No, because you're right. I was performing. I was checking all the boxes. And it's interesting when I did, gosh, it was, I believe I was 24, 23, 24, when I started putting all these pieces together and I stopped exercising. My body did start to change. And it was only then that I realized, wow, my identity is really closely tied to being an athlete. Because everyone would always say, oh, what are you training for next? You're so healthy. And then when I did get my period back, my body looked different and I wasn't getting those compliments. So it was such an interesting experience to live through and look back and say, to your point, I never received any comment that would have made me think I should eat more or my missing period is a problem. But then when I did get a regular period, those compliments stopped. And I will say here too, is even in that moment, I was in a relatively smaller body. So there's privilege there, and it's a different experience as if instead of recovering into a bigger body, for example, I wasn't facing these broader systemic anti-fat bias in the same way. So I always want to be careful there that my experience is unique. And it was interesting to see that stark contrast of as soon as my period came back, the compliments about my discipline disappeared.
So, how did you make any sense of that? Like, how was that for you emotionally? Just curious.
It was really hard. It was so hard. I had a few months before, maybe the year leading up to when I started to make those changes. I don't remember where I learned about intuitive eating, but I read it sometime in college. So I would say I had already started deconstructing my conceptions of health and nutrition and weight. So that was helpful. And I think part of the reason why I could change my behaviors overnight once I learned that no period is not normal. But it was so hard because it's one thing to intellectually say, yes, all bodies are good bodies, and weight does not equal health. But then all of a sudden, your clothes aren't fitting in the same way, and the compliments stop. And I had always felt just so strong and capable in my body. But now thinking, I don't know, what can my body handle? Will I ever be able to run again? And it's been almost a decade now, so I'm in a much better place. But if I transport myself back to that messy middle, it was so hard. And I did have that inner conviction of, I have to do this. I asked my doctor for a bone scan and had to really push for that. And they ended up finding pretty severe bone loss. So I knew I don't have any time to mess around. I have to be all in here. But by no means did that make it easy or simple. It's not like flipping a switch overnight. It took a lot of tears and reading and connecting with people in this world to really find a place where I understood my body. I felt like I could trust my hunger. My body trusted me with my hormones coming back online. So yes, lots of ups and downs, but especially at the beginning phases, probably felt like more downs than ups.
I'm curious too, did you notice a shift in the way like your energy levels were, or like anything with concentration or thinking, or what did you notice in your body, if anything?
One thing I remember is that when I didn't have a period, I was so laser focused all the time. And then, as I got my period back, kind of settling into these monthly fluctuations of feeling more tired some weeks or feeling more emotional some weeks. So that was a subtle shift, but that is something I remember thinking about of, wow, I was just a machine in high school and college, and you have all these standards, the grades, the performance in your sport, the social life. And I was able to achieve all of those things and did really enjoy it. But it's interesting looking back and saying, wow, that was a lot. That was very intense. And there was almost a robotic way I approached it that I didn't really feel those monthly rhythms in the same way. So now I'm at a point where I'm able to incorporate more rest and understand that, hey, maybe this week I'll feel a little less social. But I think that's one that I did notice and find interesting of it was a pretty, not super stark, but a definite contrast in the before and after.
Okay. So now you talk to coaches and you educate them, and I'm so curious, like, what do you go in and talk to them about? What do you really want them to understand?
There's so many things I wish all coaches were required to have some baseline training of what are the signs of undereating? What is diet culture? How does that show up in sport? What are your athletes consuming online? So typically, if I think about the main takeaways I want the coaches to have, we define diet culture. We talk about what that looks like in sport. We talk about relative energy deficiency in sport. So, for those unfamiliar, this is a very helpful framework. It maps out what are the health consequences and performance consequences of when an athlete is not eating enough. And a missing period, that's a huge one, but there's so many others of feeling like you have to pee all the time, feeling cold all the time. Of course, if you have any sudden weight changes, that's something to be aware of. So, equipping them with those signs of here's how you may know an athlete may need support. And then additionally, okay, how can you build a team culture that promotes body image resilience, that encourages your athletes to fuel their bodies? So that can be as simple as going back to our earlier conversation of we don't compliment bodies. Most coaches aren't going to be surprised if we say, don't shame your athletes' bodies, but stopping with the compliments is one that I think surprises a lot of coaches. And so it's this work is so customizable. I meet my audience where they are and talk to the organizer before to see what kind of presentation they want. But I think that building a team culture, preventing disordered eating, that's really the heart of all of my presentations. And right now, coaches are not trained at all in any of those things. So it's always a encouraging conversations when the coaches are interested, enthusiastic, but also it's just hard to believe that even since I was in high school, we've seen almost no change in this area when it comes to training coaches of how they can participate in prevention, early identification, and all of these things.
So, do coaches ever feel like it's too invasive to ask their athletes, hey, do you have your period? Are you missing them? Or would I wonder if the athletes themselves would feel like that's too invasive?
Oh, for sure. I remember when I was a high school college athlete, if anyone said tampon, I'd want to run in the other direction. It felt really uncomfortable. So we do need to tread carefully there. I think when I talk to coaches, it's more how can we have this conversation as a team and say, this is body literacy. We all need to be aware of this, especially if you're coaching adolescent athletes who are moving through puberty. So, less so drilling your athletes about their cycle and more so opening the conversation. How can we reduce the stigma and say, just if you had a broken foot, we'd want to offer care and support. The menstrual cycle, how can we see it in that same way? And then hopefully those athletes feel safe and supported that they know they can go to their coach or a parent. Or whenever I talk to athletes, I say, I'll personally get on the phone with your doctor, whoever that trusted adult is for that athlete, and making sure that when they go to the doctor's office, they're equipped to not accept your missing period is normal as an answer and make sure you say, something like relative energy deficiency in sport, or functional hypothalamic amenorrhea is the word. So if you take it to your doctor in those terms, hopefully they're willing to collaborate with you. And even if they've maybe in the past been taught it was normal, okay, now you have the language where you can work together to get the support you need.
Okay. And also, talking about like more fuel nutrition, obviously you said it's like very individualized. And so how does that conversation go with the coaches and their athletes? Because I, like you said, there's probably just this culture of this is how much I need, this is what I'm doing, I'm performing well, like why would I need to change? I'm fine.
Yes. And this is another place I find relative energy deficiency in sport so helpful, is I describe it as a roadmap of here are different ways your body might be communicating with you. So when people think of hunger, it's usually a grumbling stomach. But looking at REDS is the shorthand version of, are you feeling cold all the time? Do you have trouble focusing? Are you feeling hangry? Does it feel like you're able to recover and come back to practice day after day? There's a whole list of signs and symptoms that people typically wouldn't associate with food. So if you're able to use that as a personal check-in and have that list, and then again, if the athlete, the coach is noticing several of them, then it's okay, how can we connect you with a provider to do a more formal assessment? Because this is something that we shouldn't ignore. And so I think that's one of the most concrete tools I like to equip coaches and athletes with. Because again, it could be you're performing really well. Some athletes might lose their periods. Others might not. They'll be experiencing different symptoms. So being able to say that every body's different. And now we're starting to have the research that maps out. Here's some concrete things you can check in with.
Okay. And it's, I know there's some sports that are more, I know, like runners or dancers, or there's different sports where I think sometimes there's been a history of coaches that have promoted weight loss to be faster or to perform better or things like that. And I'm wondering if you find that as well.
This is a tricky one, especially if we go back to that adolescent athlete example of, especially for women, puberty involves weight gain. And oftentimes we see a plateau or even dip in performance. So hopefully, I think most coaches are well-intentioned, but there very much could be that mentality of you need to get to X weight. That's your race weight. And that's probably how they were coached growing up. So really needing to say, this is why we need systemic change of how can we create a world of sport that supports young athletes through that transition, that says we need to emphasize health over performance. And especially for athletes going through puberty, there may be that performance plateau in that dip. And instead of panicking, and this is a lot of times when athletes do fall into disordered eating or feeling shame in their body, reassuring them that this is a normal, healthy stage. And actually, for you to get to your full athletic potential, you need to allow this to happen. So how can we approach it with patience and compassion? I always like to recommend Lauren Fleshman's book, Good for a Girl Here. It was a pro runner, so especially for a sport like running, to hear that from one of the most accomplished athletes is really healing. But we do have a long way to go because there are coaches, programs who get the medals, who get the championships. And it's coming from this mentality of you're working against your body. Yeah. But sometimes those athletes don't start to see the impacts or the stress fractures, the injuries until after they've left the program. So we really need to be talking about it earlier and saying this is not just their 4 years of high school and then they're done. This is the body that we want them to thrive in for a lifetime. Mm-hmm. And so no championship is worth that damage. That's very preventable.
Yeah. And I think there is that fear too, as, oh my gosh, have I done irreparable damage to my body? That's like irreversible. And I think sometimes there is that fear of, What have I done? And so if anyone is listening and asking that, what would you say to them?
I would say I experienced that fear at times of I missed out on my most important bone building years, and I remind myself that I'm doing everything I can. I regained my period. I lift weights. I am mindful of my calcium, vitamin D ex intake as examples, and just saying I was doing the best I knew. My providers were doing the best they knew how, and now that I know, how can I emphasize the things that I know will nourish my bones? But some days it is deeply stressful to think, gosh, it's so unfair. I didn't know. My doctors didn't know. But now that time of my life is past. There's nothing I can do to change it. So I would say take a deep breath and just know the body is so resilient. And I really do believe recovery is possible. I haven't had a bone scan in a while, but I know my bones are in a better place because I have that monthly cycle. I'm doing everything I can and just feel that the stress is not going to make my bones any stronger. So it's easier said than done, but I try to remind myself of that, of now that you have this information, how can you put it into practice? And stressing over what already happened is not going to help reverse any of that harm. So it's so hard. Community, I think, is really important here too, of if you can find someone who's been through a similar experience and have that support system, that's invaluable. And I also think through my work, I don't want that to ever happen to any young athlete. So if my work, my story can prevent that from even one young athlete, amazing. That is my story making a difference, even though it can feel scary at times.
And I love that you do this work because I think there is a lot of misinformation or confusion or people who just don't know anything about this. And certainly when I work with teenagers and athletes, and there's that fear of, oh my gosh, to take care of myself, I might have to take a break from my sport. And I don't want to do that. I'm on the path to getting a scholarship, or I'm at the top of my game, or I finally made varsity, or whatever it is. And I don't know, do you find that ever as well?
Yes, definitely. And this goes back to why we need that systemic change of first prevention is our most ideal. So if we can prevent athletes from falling into disordered eating, under eating in the first place, that's our most optimal option. But saying, okay, how can we take the long term of, let's say you're a college or a high school athlete, going for that college scholarship. Hopefully, you can find a collegiate coach who's aware of these challenges. So, if you feel you have that support and can have that conversation, just like you would a torn ACL, saying, this is something I'm dealing with and it will take time, but I know for my long-term health, for my long-term performance, a nourished body will perform well. And so, I think it can be easy to get into that short-term view of, oh, the championship game is next week, for example. But if we're wanting a long athletic career, ultimately recovering, learning to nourish your body will allow you to perform your best, will allow you to prevent more injuries, your immune system to more effectively fight off illnesses. So as often as we can, trying to ground ourselves in the bigger picture. Because the body is so wise, and if it's not getting the nutrition it needs, chronic injury, illness, all of these things can interrupt your athletic career. So it's not an easy answer, and it's not an easy path, but I think trying to keep your eyes on the big picture, on the long term, if we can get supportive coaches on board who understand this, those are all valuable ingredients.
Absolutely. To your point, we have one body and not taking care of it. There are, over time, there's going to be consequences. And I think sometimes you forget that. Like it's just about doing the thing right now and performing right now. So keeping that long-term goal of this is the body you're going to have the rest of your life. So very much just to be mindful of that.
Yeah. It's a challenge, but I think if we can continually remind ourselves of that and that life isn't perfect, we will encounter health challenges. So if there is something that is potentially career ending, knowing you're not the first athlete to experience that, there's support available there. How can we befriend our body, support our body, nourish our body, but also understand that, gosh, life happens.
Yeah. Especially it's really hard if that's really your identity or where you get the most positive feedback, though. That's really tough.
Yes.
Yeah. So curious, maybe there's parents listening or athletes or even coaches maybe listening and they're saying, okay, you seem to know so much and maybe there's a lot of confusion. Like, how can people work with you or maybe even have you come give a talk to their coaches or their schools? Like, how can people find you? Because you obviously are, like, I would say the person to educate people or maybe even work with them individually if they're wondering, oh my gosh, am I eating enough? Am I fueling myself enough?
So my website is centerforactivewomen.com, and I think we can link that in the show notes, but it's my main hub. I just recently got on Instagram, so you can find me there at Center for Active Women. But the website really is the home base for my email address, contact box. If this at all resonates, I would love to hear from you. I see this work as very collaborative of every athlete, every coach, every parent is part of that broader culture. So the more people we can bring on board, everyone can have a healing ripple effect. And so would really love to hear from anyone. If you're listening to this podcast, I can already know we have some things in common. So that is the best place to find me and reach out.
Awesome. Oh, Greta, I love that you're doing this work. Like I said, any last final words before we end?
I think just you are capable, you have support, whatever you're going through right now, other people have experience too, and that really is the power of your voice and the power of your story. And hopefully I can work myself out of a job and so that we can create a world of sport where we encourage each other to nourish our bodies. We can address bigger problems like food insecurity. This is a very multi-layered conversation, but just knowing that I really believe that anyone can make a difference. And so just trust in that your story is really important and you can use your voice to bring that healing change.
Awesome. Greta, again, thank you so much for being here and thank you for all the work you're doing.
Thank you so much. I'm super grateful for this podcast and all your important work too. So thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening today. Behind the Bite podcast is created by me, Dr. Christina Castanini, as part of the Los Angeles Tribune Podcast Network and produced by the Tweaky Tales. I love hearing from my listeners. So if you like the show, please rate and subscribe to it on whatever platform you're on. And for anyone who wants to understand their relationship with food better, or who might be wondering if they have an eating disorder, I have a free 9-week e-course at my website. Just go to www.behindthebitepodcast.com to get your free e-course today. Please note, this podcast is designed to provide accurate and authoritative information in regard to the subject matter covered. It is given with the understanding that neither host, the publisher, or the guests are rendering legal, clinical, or other professional information. If you want or need a professional, you should find one to work with who can address your individual needs and situation.